Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
And on the 364th day, when God was bored and simply trying to use up all his spare leftover parts, he said, I need someone to get up at 3:30 in the morning with a big mouth and a small amount of common sense. So God made a DJ. He said, I need someone who always knows the time and the temperature, the latest internet rumor, and what time the band takes the stage. So God made a DJ. I need someone willing to give caller number 8 a pair of tickets to the Herpes Simplex 12 screen, to spend their Saturdays handing out pizza to used car salesmen, and to ask every single caller what station's doing it for you. So God made a DJ. I need someone whose voice and face don't match, like the roar of a lion coming out of the butt of a chihuahua. So God made a DJ. I need someone who can say with a straight face that Nickelback is their favorite band, to ask you for the phrase that pays, and then inform you that you're listening to the hot rockin', flame-throwin', booty-kickin', steamrollin', corn-shuckin' tower of hit music power that's shaking the lakes and rockin' the docks. So God made a DJ. He's a maestro of sexual innuendo, a virtuoso of the fart sound effect, and he or she is always doing it with you, to you, and for you, right up until the big hour of 10 o'clock or beyond. Yes, God made a DJ so that one day when your child comes to you and says, when I grow up, I want to be a doctor, a lawyer, a policeman, a carny, a clown, or a mime, you will have someone else to point to and say, just so you don't end up like that. And that's why God made a DJ.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a punch key's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of The Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. If Mike says he's growing a pair, he's literally growing a pair. What did you think he meant? Get your minds out of the irrigation ditch. Here he is, Mike Novak. Right.
So no matter what you think about this radio program and what I do and all of the issues that we bring up here, the environmental, the gardening issues, everything we talk about that is of import in the world, in this nation, or around the world, the truth of the matter is I'm just a DJ.
It was great.
That, I don't even know who did that. Yeah. I got it.
Excellent Paul Harvey voice.
It's a great Paul Harvey impersonation. For those of you who watched the Super Bowl for the commercials, that was one of the most talked about commercials mm-hmm. in the Super Bowl. The idea that, well, it was an old Paul Harvey speech that they put, that Chrysler put visuals to, and it got a lot of press, and there's a lot of people out there. There's half of the world's divided into two parts here. The half that say, oh, how we miss Paul Harvey. Wow. Remember Paul Harvey? And the other half that's saying, who?
Yeah. And they're just now they're probably looking him up and finding out more about
what?
Him.
Huh? You know, that's the younger half, by the way. And then the ones who miss. But there's a tiny little percentage and I put myself into that tiny little percentage, that remember Paul Harvey not so fondly, okay? Because I think, really, Paul Harvey is the godfather of Rush Limbaugh. You wouldn't have the Rush Limbaughs of the world today if it weren't for Paul Harvey, who opened that door, and then Rush Limbaugh came in and exploited it. Because Paul, you know, you'll remember it was Paul Harvey News and Comment, and that was his get out of jail free card to say pretty much anything he wanted, and he would throw the little comments right in with the middle of the news. So you didn't know whether you were getting news or comment. Was it Paul's opinion or was it fact? And that kind of opened the door to the right-wing tirades, which took over radio. And now there's, you know, at this point, witness the station we're on here, been some backlash and people have come back the other way to try to balance it out. It's still not balanced, not even close. You know, the number of right-wing stations in the country versus the left. It'd be nice if it were back in the day where we had what was known as the truth, but you have to put air quotes around that anyway, because who decides what truth is? So there you go. That's the tribute. That's the parody. Oh, and that's the other thing. I was looking up the parody. I got it from Kathleen, who got it from Steve King, an old buddy of mine who used to do the overnights at Gargantua Radio down the dial with his wife, Johnny Putman, and Steve King. And I'm not surprised he found it. And it's courtesy of something called Delicious Audio. Mm-hmm. Whatever Delicious Audio is. And it's on a website called Lean On Sarah, whatever that means. This is the 21st century. You just even try to track stuff like this down. But it is funny. It's a very funny thing. Welcome to the show, everybody. Good morning. That's Denny Sheeter over there. And Sarah Batka is here in the studio being very serious and staring at the computer screen. Okay, now you're
good morning.
Now you're smiling. Lisa Albrecht on the other side of the room because she doesn't like to sit too close to Sarah.
What? I would sit next to her. You separated us on day one.
That's true.
You said
that's
you why, go here and she goes there.
That's why Rob Carthol is in the middle.
Oh, I think you were just afraid
morning,
originally.
Everybody.
And what?
I think you were originally afraid of getting ganged up on. That's why you brought Rob on.
I am. I'm always afraid.
Not to mention his incredible talent, but the level of women to men ratio in here was.
It's still a good ratio here. It's 3-2.
Hey, I'm in the booth. I don't count.
That's true. Okay, it's 2-2. We have a big announcement today, don't we? Oh, wait a second. Now, what I need to do is one of the other things that I got this week. And now I got to find it. I got some sound effects.
Oh,
you know, because if we're talking about radio shows, you know, what's a radio show without sound effects?
True.
And the problem is, I loaded it in. It was like 4 minutes to 9 o'clock when I was there in the other room, and of course, I'm not going to find it. I'm not going to find it.
I'll go check.
You know why? I think I need to refresh. That's why.
There you go.
Okay. Refresh. Now let's look for it. Anyway, we do have a, there we are.
Big announcement today.
Big announcement today. This is what I was looking for right now. Wow, that's loud. Okay. can we try that again? That's better.
There we go.
Okay, every DJ needs to have a rim shot, okay? And the other one that we added in here we go. Here's the other one. And this is for our announcement.
That was great.
All right. Next week is a big deal. In that there is a climate Forward March in Washington, D.C. And not only there, but all across the country, as we've been finding out. The idea is that people who are interested in the environment are going to Washington, D.C. to march from the Washington Monument to the White House and encourage, shall we say, encourage the president to stop the XL, Keystone XL pipeline, to encourage the president to act forcefully about carbon regulations. Because if you listen to our friend Blake Davis, who was on a few weeks ago, that's scary stuff. I encourage people to do that. I linked it to this week's show. If you go to MikeNovak.net, that conversation with Blake Davis, and what is likely to happen if we don't do anything soon, you know, not even soon, right now, you know, we have to act right now about climate change. We have to stop this dithering. We have to stop pretending that it's okay to be fracking for natural gas. We have to stop pretending that it's okay to keep coal burning plants going. We have to stop pretending that it's okay to import all that oil. And we have to stop pretending that it's okay not to invest our energies and our money in clean energy. It's time to move forward. And that's what the march is all about. So I'm going. I'm going to D.C. next week to march. Lisa is going.
I'm on the bus.
She's on the bus. I'm in a car full of people. We'll be singing 99 Bottles of Beer on the Wall. I want you to get it started. Actually, we should get Mr. Turk there, too, because he's the master of beer. And he could lead the song, 99 Bottles of Beer. So Lisa and I will be in D.C., where we're going to hook up and broadcast at least part of the show from, I hope, the mall, the National Mall. I'm not sure exactly what the setup is, but we're working on it, getting a hotspot, laptop, microphones, talk to people right there at the march and broadcast it here. Where Sarah and Rob and Denny will be holding down the fort.
Oh, yeah.
Holding it down, buddy. Get ready.
And if everything crashes, because I'm working with Mr. Sanders, we're working on the technical aspects
of this.
If
everything crashes, we're leaving. No, I'm just kidding.
No. That's not the idea at all.
The opposite of the idea.
Oh. Yeah, right.
Oh, man.
Read the scorecard, Denny.
No, I didn't get the memo. Sorry.
Okay. Denny and Sarah and Rob are here to keep things going. So you guys might have to actually come up with something, you know, some like show content.
I'm on it.
Oh, you're working on it already.
Yes.
Okay. I've been talking to Sierra Club, and we're working on getting some guests. I can't tell you who it's going to be yet, but they're probably, I hope, some national people and some local people as well. And then right after we finish the broadcast at 11 a.m. Central, which is noon Eastern, the march starts. You going to get yourself arrested, Lisa?
They're saying that that's going to be a limited select few people who get arrested.
Cool. I don't want to be on that list.
I've decided. And I figured out the transportation, since I'll be on the bus, they won't be waiting for me the next morning to get let out of jail.
I can see people getting on the bus. Hey, we got to go bail Sarah. I mean, Lisa. We got to go bail Lisa. Let's get her out of jail here. I think you're right. I think you'd miss
the
bus.
I think the logistics will make that kind of challenging. So, plus, you know, they're talking tens of thousands of people and, you know. I would not be opposed if, you know, somebody grabs me and handcuffs me for whatever, but I doubt that'll happen. Slim chances.
Yeah.
I'm willing, though, at this point.
You know what? I'm going to have broadcast equipment with me, so I don't really.
Broadcasting live from
D.C. jail.
From cell block 14. It's the Mike Novak Show.
That'd be one heck of a podcast.
That would be. That really would be. So, I, in addition to tuning in next week, and I hope you all tune in to the show, because as I said, it is important. The other thing we need to tell you is that there's a march in Chicago as well. Have you got that up there, Lisa?
I wanted to stagger them. So I have that you'll be in D.C. and I'm about to post that there's also a march here at Grant Park.
But the point is, do you have that? So you're going to post the Facebook page for that, I take it.
Yes. I already posted half of it, that you'll be there. And now I need to post the.
Yeah.
I don't want to put them all in one thing.
All right. Well, I'm not going to be in Chicago for that. But folks can march in Chicago. And that starts at 11 a.m. in Grant Park. To coincide with the 12 Eastern start in Washington, D.C. And it's happening in cities all over the country. I don't know exactly. Do you have that list of cities, Lisa?
No.
Why not?
Because I only heard about it this morning. I didn't know that there was anything until I saw it on your page. It's not on the Sierra Club website or anything. I couldn't find it anywhere this morning. So
really?
You're scooping the news here.
No, I'm not. This is I got this from a listener yesterday. So let's see here. Here is Climate Forward. I know I have it. Information on various cities. You know, it doesn't matter. What matters is here in Chicago that you can march again starting at 11 o'clock at Grant Park. So I hope that people do that because it is, as I said, it's very, 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 very important.
So I've got it up for the Facebook listeners.
So if those of you following us on Facebook, it's up there. I've got some links at MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. Now I'm going to have to see. I had all these different sites up. And as I do on a Saturday afternoon where, you know, and then I lose track of all of them at various times because I don't know where that was. I'll look it up and we'll find out what other cities are there. All right. And I hope you tune in next week. Tell your friends, get active and be part of the change in America. On today's show. In just a couple of minutes, Gabriel Spitzer, that name may seem familiar, especially if you're an NPR listener. He was their environmental reporter at the WBEZ here in Chicago for a while. He's now at KPLU. He's the youth and education reporter. That's in Seattle, 88.5 in Seattle. He's here, going to be here. In fact, you've got him on the phone already. Wow. Denny is good. And we're going to talk about the MELA conference coming up, and that's Midwest Ecological Landscape Alliance. Full disclosure, I am the co-founder of the organization and have never received a dime in 11 years. That's the full disclosure. It's like all the organizations I belong to. It's all strictly volunteer, including radio, it seems. Not really, but pretty close. Rick DeMaio weather, 9:45. In the second hour, I have right back here. See what this is? This is a cartridge, laser toner cartridge from my Samsung ML2525 in the year ML2525. If ink cartridges are still alive, I'm going to present this to our guest who starts the second hour, Rich Fisher, who's the chief sustainability officer with a company called Evolve. And they're working on a new model of ink cartridges. I love what they call it. There's a video that I have a link to. There's a very fancy marketing guy. His name is Hazlett. Jeffrey Hazlett, who did a video for them. He calls these companies that make these cartridges Big Ink and Toner. I love the idea of Big Ink and Toner, you know, like Big Ag, Big Business, Big Everything, Big Ink and Toner. So we'll talk about what the model is here for beating Big Ink and Toner. And basically, it's reusing cartridges, refilling them and reusing them. And then the first automobile race in America was held in Chicago. Did you know that? Everybody in the room?
I did not know that.
Huh?
Didn't know that.
Okay. That's why I'm here, to educate you. And it's going to be redone. It's going to there's going to be a race in honor of that. The same route. In fact, the map is up on my website, MikeNovak.net, this week, if you scroll down. We will be talking to David Funchen from 101 Celsius. And you've met David.
I have, in the solar industry. Paths have crossed.
101 Celsius is a leading distributor and installer of solar thermal evacuated tube systems. But I want to know what they have to do with the big race, because it's electric vehicles. So there is a connection there someplace.
There's often overlap. Folks are either interested in, like Ron Calgill from the Mighty House show on Saturday mornings on WCPT. See, I've been listening to you.
8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
8 a.m. to 11 a.m. He does wind and solar. And it's often, you'll find companies that also often will leak over into electric vehicles, because it all kind of feeds hand in hand.
Yep. Good. And so David Funchen will be here also. It's a jam-packed show. And in just a few minutes, Rob and I will continue to let you know about the big Commie Garden FabCon, otherwise known as Connecting Chicago Gardeners.
Chicago Community Gardeners.
Connecting Chicago Community Gardeners. But we like to call it the big Commie Garden FabCon, which is the 23rd, Saturday. Do you know how many people have signed up for that yet?
Last I heard, we were at about 100 RSVPs, and that was a few days ago. So hopefully we're, a bit more than that now.
We want to kind of double that.
Yeah, I think the capacity is a little bit about double that.
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to have any trouble. It's going to be.
Because, and the idea is to encourage community gardeners from all over the city to come to the Chicago Center for Green Technology and learn about resources, learn about organizing, learn about sustainable techniques, everything that that you encounter when you start a community garden. Whether you already have one or you're thinking about it, and you might be one of those people who says, hey, I want one in my neighborhood. How do I do it? Well, that's the idea. And it is possible. It's hard to tell right now. Rob and I have been on the steering committee for this.
Fun times,
yeah. I always love them.
Strictly volunteer.
I thought they were going to hand us a big bag of cash when we were done with that. Okay, and we'll talk more about that. Now, I'm hoping that this works here. Let's see if we've got... yes, there he is. I was looking at the fader here and about to bring in Gabriel Spitzer, and it didn't say phone. It said BL0788G. So that scared me a little bit, but that is the right fader. Gabriel Spitzer, how are you?
I'd rather you call me BL0788G from now on, Mike. That's fine.
Okay. We are speaking to BL0788G from the future, as a matter of fact, when all people will have only numbers. Because it'll be so much more efficient, don't you think?
We're way ahead of the game here in Seattle.
Do you mind if I call you BL for short?
That'd be fine.
Okay. And sometimes known as Gabriel Spitzer, and who works at KPLU. What is a KPLU in Seattle?
We are one of the two public radio... Well, actually, there's a bunch, but we are one of the two newsy public radio stations out here in Seattle.
So how come you bailed on Chicago? You used to be at BEZ, and the only reason I mention it now is because... people can't hear you there, so they're not going to immediately tune over there and try to get you.
Well, let's hope not. I did so with a heavy heart. I love Chicago. I was there for 6 years and had my kids there and figured out my career there, and lots and lots of important things happened to me in Chicago. We left. My wife is also a reporter, and I, honestly, we were desperate to get to the mountains and to salt water and to tall trees and be able to access nature in a little bit different way, which feeds into this discussion a little bit. Maybe we can figure out ways to access nature in our own backyards a little bit more thoughtfully.
Yeah, actually, it's an honor to have you being at the Mila conference. Now, your job is kind of unique. I have not seen this, well, actually I have, once or twice I saw something like this at a conference, but the idea is that, how would you describe your role at the Mila conference coming up?
Regurgitator? No. let me rephrase that. What we're calling it is a reflector, which I actually think is a pretty cool concept. So primarily what I'll be doing, I'll be kind of framing the issues and stuff, and then we'll have panels. And then I think for people who have been to conferences or panel discussions, a lot of times there's lots and lots of interesting stuff, and you're not, at the end, you're not sure kind of what it adds up to. And, you know, being in radio and hosting lots of panels, you know, I find that as well. Like, wow, this was a great conversation, and I feel like we just kind of meandered all over the map. And so I see my job as kind of taking that stuff, digesting it, and kind of reframing it a little bit so that we can absorb the important parts and then kind of move the ball forward a little bit for the next conversation.
I think it's a good way of putting it. And as for meandering conversations on the radio, I am proud of that. Okay. You know, Garden Design Magazine last year, no, in 2011, called me highly distractible. All right. Mr. BL07AAG for your information. But you're right. It's, when you have a conference like that and Mila, you know, the Midwest Ecological Landscape Alliance, is about basically sustainable landscapes wherever they are. You know, whether it's in your backyard or it's a corporate campus or whether it's a park, or any other kind of open that is tended to, by human beings, I guess. And the kinds of people who come to these conferences are all over the map. Especially in Mila, because our mission when we started it was to be inclusive. Mila is a big tent, all right? And the idea of Mila is that it's a movement, which is desperately needed at this point. And again, it's why I'm going to Washington, D.C. Next week. Are you going there by any chance, Gabe?
Me, no, I don't think so. But I hope you guys don't get arrested, or if you do, that you get good stories out of it.
You know, if we get arrested, it's great stories. You know, it's a win-win proposition whether or not we get arrested. But getting back to Mila and the conference, so the kind of people they attract are arborists, restoration experts, educators, nonprofit groups, growers, garden centers, landscape architects and designers. Landscape contractors, municipal leaders, park district leaders, policymakers, product suppliers and manufacturers. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. So sometimes you have a conference or a session and you need to put it into some kind of perspective. And as reflector, and I love the idea of you being a reflector also, I just think it's a great term. And I would advise people to wear their sunglasses when they get close to you.
By all means.
You are there to listen and then interpret, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, they are going to get an interesting choice in me, because while I am familiar with the broad issues, I don't know a lot about the specifics of the industry and the various industries that you mentioned. And as you said, they really run the gamut. So, that could be good or bad, I suppose. But I think the idea is that you kind of stir it up in the crucible of somebody who is sort of paying attention, but maybe doesn't have a lot of pre-existing expertise. And hopefully from that will emerge something sort of coherent. It's a little strange for me. I'm used to being able to ask questions, throwing things out there and then having people who know stuff give the actual substance. So I warned them that I might just spontaneously break out into an interview in the middle of these reflection sessions. And I hope that doesn't take them too much by surprise. But yeah, I think it's actually going to be really pretty fun, and I just hope I get it right.
Well, and I think the other reason you're there, and actually you just hit upon it, it wouldn't surprise me, because I'm going to be there too, and I'll be judging you the whole time.
Thanks.
But no pressure, okay? Well, they didn't ask me to do it, so, you know, I'll be sitting there, okay, well, okay, another radio guy, all right.
wouldn't have done it that way.
Yeah, really. but the reason you're there is because you're a smart guy, and you do know how to distill things, and you have studied environmental change over the years, especially at WBEZ. And it makes sense, even if you're not specifically familiar with, you know, how to grow a crabapple tree for market, you know, but you get it. And I think that's a really good point, because you want somebody, I think, outside of any individual realm to come in and say, all right, this is what I hear, and this is what I think you need to work on. Because I'm looking at the sessions, and for people who might be interested in this conference, you can go to my website, mikenovak.net, and find the links. Or go to melaweb.org, M-E-L-A-W-E-B.org, and the conference information, there's a link right on the homepage. But there are, you know, in the horticultural industry, like a lot of industries, times have not been good in the last few years. And on top of it, it's not just the times have been difficult and the economy's been down. We're at a point where we're trying to teach sustainability to our customers. And sometimes sustainability costs a little more, at least at the outset. You know, with the theory being that as you move forward and everybody does it, then it's all that equals out and actually gets better. But that there, so that's those are twin problems that the industry has to deal with. And so I'm looking at the sessions you've got, looking at workforce questions and marketing the businesses, climate change adaptations, you know, discussion with designers and growers. That sounds like it's going to be fabulous and very interesting. Cultivating partnerships in conservation, urban forests, how to manage trees. And in a few weeks, actually, I'm going to have a discussion about urban forests on this show, and where Chicago stands in that. So I would imagine this is a challenge and an opportunity for you to learn.
Absolutely. And what interests me, I think, greatly, I mean, as you alluded to, is the fact that often this does cost more, at least initially, and at least in terms of dollars and cents. And as with so many ecological strategies, from a consumer's point of view, the big question is, how do you motivate, I guess, both consumers and practitioners to make changes when the costs and benefits are not straightforward and not quantifiable in the way people are used to? And, of course, the calculus for an individual is different from a calculus for a group, like a neighborhood or a city or a planet. Mm-hmm. And so reconciling all that stuff and making sense of that to both customers and also to, I would think to business owners, making the case to make a change is an interesting challenge. And we kind of have to figure out ways of talking about that and ways of measuring it. And I think that that's going to be a big question, particularly in difficult economic times.
We're talking to BL07A8G. Sometimes known as Gabriel Spitzer, who's who now at
KPFA. My friends call me BL7, yeah.
BL07, I think. he's at KPLU in Seattle, 88.5 if you happen to be out that way. And by the way, you know, I for a number of years had a vacation house out on the Olympic Peninsula of Washington
really?
State. Yes. So I know the area. And I'm jealous because it's a beautiful, beautiful area. You know, I always tell people, you get off the plane in Seattle or you get off the train, because I used to take the Empire Builder occasionally into Seattle. And you get off and the air smells different. It's just, you know, it's that West Coast, Northwest Coast. It's not, you know, and it's different from California. It's just, there's something earthy and rich about.
Yeah, exactly. It's peaty. It smells like like the soil you find under a pine tree.
Exactly, because mostly you're under pine trees there.
Yes, indeed.
It has something to do with it. So before I let you go, Gabriel, and by the way, again, the conference, I'll let people know, Midwest Ecological Landscape Alliance is February 28th. That's a Thursday. It's at the University Center of Lake County in Grays Lake, Illinois. And if you want more information, you can call 312-857-MELA, M-E-L-A. 312-857-MELA, or go to my website, or go to MELAweb.org. Tell me a little bit, Gabriel, about what you're covering now in Seattle.
Well, it's pretty different. You know, my beat specifically is youth and education. So think of your sort of classic ed reporter covering schools and stuff, but we've broadened it out a little bit to covering anything that has to do with young people. And then I have a longstanding interest in science, and particularly in neuroscience. So one of my sort of the ways I'm taking it have to do with the ways kids learn and develop. And also I've got a couple of little kids, so I have a abiding interest in that as well. But we also do general stuff. So I get to, you know, if you're in the Northwest, you kind of can't escape doing some coverage of environmental issues, because this is in a lot of ways one of the ground zeros in the United States for those kinds of movements. And so I wound up doing a bit of that here and there as well.
Well, and I will admit that really being out in the Pacific Northwest for a number of years on occasion was what got me started as well. Not only covering environmental issues, but gardening. You know, it's just so green out there. You can't help but notice and want to participate. So, I can thank the Pacific Northwest, myself for, what I call my mid-course correction in life.
Thank or blame it.
Yeah, or blame. Right. All right. Well, listen, it was great talking to you, Gabriel. Once again, I will see you on the 28th. And looking forward to it, and I think you're going to be fabulous, and we'll have a cup of coffee and chat about the biz, eh?
Yeah, back at you, Mike. Oh. Good to talk to you too.
Great talking to you. All right, you have a good one, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
All right, so long.
Bye bye. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. He's a good guy. I like Gabriel. He covered me. He interviewed me a couple of times for. Be easy when about Chicago Recycling Coalition and all the stuff that was getting done and specifically not getting done in the city of Chicago. We got Rick DeMaio weather coming up. There's a big storm out west. You know what we're going to start with? A question that Ron Cowgill asked me yesterday. And Ron was very funny when I did the Growing Green segment on his show. Wanted to know whether the National Weather Service is into that whole naming storms thing that the Weather Channel's doing. And from what I can tell, they don't like it a bit. And I know, you've heard my opinion. I don't like it. I think it's one of the dumbest things ever. And we'll talk to Rick DeMaio about that when he comes in here. Do you sometimes feel as though you got left at the gardening starting gate? That even your questions have questions? If you're one of those folks, now is the perfect time to get a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Every issue is chock full of stories that will not only inspire you, but might actually teach you a couple of things about gardening. The January-February planning issue is still out on newsstands all over town, and in it, three experts were asked, what are three easy vegetables, herbs, or fruits that you would recommend to someone who has never gardened before? Okay, let's get a Rob, what would you put on that list?
I would say tomatoes, even though they're maybe not the easiest, but everybody wants to grow them, so you may as well start learning how.
Sarah?
You said fruits or vegetables?
Fruits, vegetables, or herbs. If you've never gardened.
Chives.
Really?
I'm going chives. Super easy, no pests, perennial. I mean, plant it once, you'll have it forever.
That's a great, I like that.
Yeah, I'm going chives for sure.
Okay. Well, by the way, two out of the three did say tomatoes.
Those are the most popular.
Yeah, because everybody wants them. And what else on the list were cucumbers, radishes, basil, bell peppers.
Radishes are good.
Radishes are easy. You just throw those seeds down, and it's fun, you know, digging up a radish.
Eat them in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Well, not a couple of weeks, but it's pretty fast.
Couple, three, four.
Yeah. Weeks. So, hey, just how hard can this gardening stuff be? You know, and then there's my column on the inside back page. Read it and you'll say, hey, how hard can this writing stuff be? Get a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
We just got a post from Angola. That's my buddy, Dave Zaber, who was up Wisconsin way and is now stationed in Angola doing environmental work. He says, listening to you in Angola, massive storms, climate change kills. Wow. And Dave's going to be on the show. He's just, he sent me some really, really interesting stuff that... and just this amazing report, and I'm going to have him, I'm going to get him on the phone and talk about his work in Angola, because it's fascinating. I mean, he was writing to me the other day wanting to know how to clean up sewage off a floor because they didn't have access to bleach. And you can do vinegar is probably your best bet, but, and that's something else we're going to talk about on the show in a couple of weeks is cleaning stuff, that natural cleaners. My friend Kaida Muhammad from the South Side is going to be on the show, and we'll talk about natural cleaning products. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Maybe this year you want to add that deck or pool to your backyard, but you're concerned about protecting your special tree or shrubs. Construction on your property can cause damage to your existing trees. That's why proper planning will protect your trees, minimize damage, and add years to your tree's life. Establishing a tree protection zone with fencing around valuable trees to keep equipment as far away as possible, pruning properly for required clearance, and preventing or mitigating soil compaction, excavation, or trenching are some of the ways the Care of Trees can help your trees thrive during and after construction. You'll be glad you took preventive care as you relax on your new deck under the shade of your 150-year-old oak. The Care of Trees can make recommendations and provide the services that can protect your trees during your next construction project. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
It is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Thank you for being with us on a Sunday morning. Let's bring in our meteorologist, Rick DeMille, who's a fortunate son.
No, I'm not, because I should be playing in the 2 feet of snow that Winter Storm Nemo left the New York City area, Mike. That's where I should be right now.
Don't say that word.
Well, we could do this. We can say Winter Storm Okra.
Winter Storm Okra?
You see, that's what I'm saying. That's the storm that's going through the Upper Plains right now.
Oh, yeah.
Is that what they call
it? No. It's not quite Okra. It also ended in
Oh, Orca. That's it.
Orca.
Orca, or something like that.
Yeah. You know, where are they coming up with these names? You know, and
I don't know.
Don't you think that some of these meteorologists on the Weather Channel,
they barely mention it, Mike. The people out on the field barely mention it.
Because they gotta be embarrassed.
They are.
They just have to be embarrassed by this.
And the thing about it is, I know a few people. I'm not going to say names, but they just kind of looked the other way when I asked them about it, and they just said, pretty much, don't ask me about it.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're going to quietly drop it. You watch.
Oh, it's not going to go away quietly. It's going to be a thud.
I saw an article I was looking it up yesterday because Ron Cowgill asked me about this on his show, and so I quickly looked up something, and it seems like the National Weather Service is none too pleased about this.
Oh, no, because I feel like, they feel like they were compelled to refer to it, but clearly that's not the case. And the strange thing about it, Mike, if I go back and say the names of the last five storms, you would actually not know anything about those storms. Before Nemo, we had Magnus, right? Where was Magnus? Before that, we had Luna, and then Khan, and then Jove, and then Iago. And the next two, believe it or not, are Plato. And get this, for the letter Q, guess what the name of the storm is for the letter Q?
Wait, Quentin.
No, it's just Q.
That's trendy, though.
Wait. You know what my response to that is?
See, I was thinking for D, they should have used, dipstick, for S, schmuck, something like that. Those are names that I could relate to as far as, being mauled by a winter storm. But it's incredibly bizarre. I don't know why they're doing it. And if anything, all everybody kept talking about was Finding Nemo, Tracking Nemo.
I know, Finding Nemo, Tracking. It was right there in front of you. Look at the map.
God, yeah.
How could you miss it?
And then, believe it or not, after Q is Rocky.
I need the music. So, I wish I had it.
Yeah, so if there is actually a storm that's moving into Philadelphia called Rocky, they're going to have lots of fun with that one.
Oh, my goodness.
Or maybe not.
Okay, let me just make a plea here to anybody from the Weather Channel who happens to be listening to the show. Stop the madness. Stop the madness now.
I know. But I have to say, I was watching a little bit of the coverage yesterday and the day before, and I noticed that none of the people out in the field actually refer to it. It was only the ones in the studio. But what I do want to say is, Mike, when was the last time? And now we're getting a little bit used to this. But 2-3 days out, we predicted a blizzard with 2 to 3 feet of snow in exactly the area where it hit. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
really the numerical models, the ability to observe the atmosphere, the ability to predict the interaction between the ocean and the atmosphere, where those two join up, has always been the most difficult thing for scientists to do, and we're getting it right. We really are. And it's not like we go, boy, there could be a coastal storm. A lot of things are coming together. We'll see how things work out. We're going 3 days out going, we're going to get a blizzard, and the heavy snow is going to line up from New York City to about Boston is going to be 20 to 30 inches. And it happened. That never used to happen. And I'm not patting myself on the back, but, one of the great things about the field of meteorology outside of Doppler radar and the ability to observe it through, satellite technology is the ability to predict these features that we were never able to predict. Now, I think it's still a long way of predicting exactly that a tornado is going to happen in a certain area within 5 minutes. That, I think, is still difficult to do. But you had a storm here that affected, you know, 40 to 45 million people. The governor of Massachusetts and Connecticut, I think both of them said everybody off the roads after 6 o'clock, even though they had signs up on the Long Island Expressway for telling people stay off the LIE, only emergency vehicles. You saw, I don't know the reports, there were over 500 cars that got stuck. We're telling people way ahead of time what to expect, and it's happening. And I still think what needs to be brought into this conversation is how climate change is not so much altering the amount of snow we get, but the type of snowstorms that we get. We're not getting these little guys coming up the East Coast. We're getting these big storms. I was looking at the water temperature off the coast of North Carolina last week, and about 300 miles off the coast, the Gulf Stream, which typically is in the lower 60s, the water temperature was 68 degrees Fahrenheit. And when you look at where these storms are developing, the same storm that went up the coast right after Hurricane Sandy, that was the last time they had a big snow up there, followed the path of warmer water and dumped 8 to 12 inches of snow, and it was only the first week of November. So when you are marching in D.C. next week and someone comes up to you and says, hey, buddy, thanks for the 20 to 30 inches of global warming snow that we got last week, say, you know what, that's probably the new norm. And it's a lot more difficult to clean up 30 inches of snow for a major metropolitan area than it is for about 3 to 5 inches. And I think you got to have that kind of ammunition in your back pocket when someone comes at you with obviously something that's not true.
Yeah. You know what I'm going to do then? You're going to give me my talking points.
Sure, I can do that for you.
You know, I kind of wish you'd be there with us because I've seen this guy in action. I remember you will appreciate this, Lisa, because Rick and I about 3-4 years ago went to see Al Gore speak, and there were some protesters outside there handing out literature. Oh my goodness!
It was anti us literature. You got to make sure.
Yeah, well, it was climate change is a hoax, blah blah right. blah. And Rick took this guy to the woodshed. This one poor little kid who thought he had all the answers, and Rick just kept pummeling him with questions. Well, what about this? Well, what about this?
I didn't yell at him. I just talked to him.
Well, and that's, yeah, and you took him to the cleaners too.
But that's a funny thing is you start spewing fact, and they don't have much to stand on.
Right.
Rick, did you see the Fox News piece this week?
No, I didn't. I try not to watch the FAUX.
I will put it up just so that people can see. I think it's good to see what's up every now and then. But they said that the reason why solar is failing, which of course it's not, had 12% job increase in the solar industry in this economy. Mm-hmm. But they said the reason why solar is doing better in Germany is because they get more sun. Can you believe?
Wait. My response to that is...
I lost my mind. The other inaccuracies in their piece is just mind-blowing. I think it's important to watch it just to see what the deniers, what kind of incredible craziness that they're putting out there. And unfortunately, if people don't know the truth, it sounds factual.
Well, what's weird about it is that it's one of those talking points about clean energy and the importance of solar, and it's something that you guys have been, Lisa, talking about for years by saying, well, you know, Germany leads the world and they get as much sun as Alaska does, and this has been your main talking point for a long time. So to have the those clowns come out and just say, no, black is white. I don't know if you realize that, but black is white.
Yeah, no, Germany gets more sun than the rest of the United States.
Well you know, since you are going to be in Washington, D.C., and people will say, well, we haven't had much, you know, snow in some places and other parts, it generally costs, Mike, about $1 million for a major metropolitan area to clean about an inch of snow. For a place like New York City and Chicago, for Boston a little bit less because it's a smaller area, but generally it's about $1 million per inch. Studies have shown that if you get a 3 to 4 inch snowfall, it'll cost you about $3 to $4 million. If you get a 10 to 12 inch snowfall, it's almost like $1.5 million because there's so much more to do from a standpoint of plowing it, lifting the snow, pushing it off to the side, And then when you get up into the 20 and 25 inch, it's almost $2 million per inch. So the thing about it is you can't look at the actual end of the season snowfall. New York City budgets about $40 million a year to remove snow because they generally get about 20 to 25 inches of snow. And they know they're going to get some good ones and then some not so good ones. So what you got to be able to do, and we've seen this, and I think you've seen this as well, is that we're getting some of these bigger snows. And even when D.C. got hit with those two or three big snows a couple of years ago, there were some great pieces written about how climate change and global warming is actually producing larger snowstorms. And there were a ton of people saying, well, how come we're getting all the snow when you said we're going to get global warming? We're not talking about global warming. We're talking about how the Earth's environment is changing, and the result is not so much more hurricanes, but more intense hurricanes. It's not so much more storms, but more intense storms. And clearly what just happened this past week and early in the year with Sandy and the storm that followed is pretty much going down that path as well.
It's just unbelievable. When I saw those totals, 36 inches, I just thought, oh, you got to be kidding me. This is and as you said, you guys nailed it. So
that was the good part. It's nice to be able to get a good
the bad
part
is they had to deal with it, but the good part is, yeah, you guys nailed it. So what if we're not getting 3 feet of snow this week? What are we getting?
No, and the thing about it is all of a sudden we've seen you know, a nice proliferation of these little you know, clipper systems come through. Bottom line, I know we got about 80 seconds here. No, we'll say 45. How about that?
That's it.
About 45 seconds. Rain today, obviously, temperatures low in mid-40s. Dry weather tomorrow, dry weather Tuesday, and then strangely enough, as we head into the rest of the week, the pattern may actually warm up a little bit before another system comes through here on Wednesday. But more importantly, though, Mike, it seems that when you get to D.C. next week, there could be a little bit of rain and some snow coming through there Thursday and Friday, but it looks like it clears out just in time for the weekend.
All right. Well, it's Rick DeMaio, weather, the master of the climate change argument, and it's a shame you can't be with me, but you'll be with me in spirit next week.
And anybody who heads to the auto show, every time you walk up to a person who's selling you a car or trying to, say the word hybrid.
Good idea.
Good
Fabulous.
Idea.
All right. Rick, we'll talk to you. Well, the folks here will talk to you next week.
We'll talk to you next week. Good
All right.
Luck,
take care.
Okay,
hybrids, that's in the second hour, too, and recycling.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show on Sunday, the 10th of February, 2013. Just a reminder, let's for those people who might have missed the first hour, Lisa, a note that you and I will be at Climate Forward next Sunday in Washington, D.C. Also want to remind folks that there's a march in Chicago. And you posted that on Facebook, right?
Yes.
I've
been looking to find out other cities. So far, the only one I can find is Chicago. So
now that's weird because I had whatever the link was. Okay, now it's going to make me crazy, and I'm going to have to find it because somebody sent it to me,
because it's not on the 350
It listed all of the cities, and it just had this big list of
that's
cities.
Great.
Let me just go right here because I got an email yesterday. Here it is.
Just email it to me and I'll repost.
No, that wasn't it. Who was it from? Because you responded. It was the woman who wrote.
Jill?
To Jill, right.
Okay, I've got that email.
Yeah, well, then look in her. No, what I did, type in the search engine what she typed in.
Okay.
And she, because she didn't actually send me a link. She just said type in this into the search engine, and then I did, and like the first site had all the different cities there, but we just wanted to let folks know that there is a march in Chicago as well. That starts at 11 o'clock at Grant Park next Sunday. The Climate Forward, and I should mention, because I didn't before, sponsored by Sierra Club and 350.org. which is Bill McKibben's group, about climate change. And it's interesting because several weeks ago, actually the day after my birthday, I got a phone call and I didn't recognize the number. And it was somebody from the Sierra Club and saying, hey, we're hoping you can come to Washington on the 17th. And I said, yeah, I'm planning to broadcast my radio show from there. You know, it was just somebody on the phone bank there. And he says, we're trying to get 20,000. And so I went on my soapbox and I said, you get 20,000, you won't even be in the newspapers.
No.
You know what? And okay, here's my challenge to folks listening to the show right now, because this is what I truly believe. If we have 20,000 people there, it won't be in any major medium. There will be no coverage at all. If we have 100,000 people, there'll be, you know, 15 seconds of coverage. It's because the mainstream media will not cover this. I will. I'm going to be broadcasting from there. That's what I do. But, you know, Meet the Press will still have that day. They'll have Newt Gingrich on again or something, or John McCain, the president of. I saw him on Daily Kos. They call him the president of Meet the Pressistan, and because he's on every week, you know, and they'll talk about some stupid thing, you know, their obstruction that the Republicans are doing and blah, blah, blah. And the climate will just go, you know, like it did during the election season where nobody mentioned it. And my challenge to you next week is if there's 20,000, try to find an article about it. Try to find a TV story. Won't be there. Even though 20,000 people are marching in Washington, D.C. But like I said, if there's 100,000, you might get a little coverage. It's got to be really big. It's that's the thing. So, you know, that was my way of saying to the poor kid on the phone bank, you guys got to shoot higher than this. You got to aim higher than 20,000 people. There have to be 100,000 people out there. There have to be 150, 200,000 people. Get as many people there as we're at the inauguration, and then we'll start talking. But getting folks to do something about climate change is very difficult. And that's why I have the current guest in the studio, and that's Rich Fisher. Hey, Rich, didn't I see your entourage? Are they here? Oh, okay.
My entourage is my daughter and her boyfriend, Austin.
Oh, okay. What's your daughter's name?
Carson.
All right. I mean, you name Austin, but you got to get Carson's name out there, too, you know.
I figure she knows everybody already.
And is she tweeting away right now to let folks know that she's on the show? Is that it?
She's actually studying environmental science at Northwestern, so she thought this would be a perfect opportunity to see how it works.
Oh, fantastic.
Carson, slide over to the microphone.
Oh, gosh.
Get over there. Sit down.
Hi.
Hi. Environmental science at Northwestern.
Yes.
We'll see
how that goes.
No, don't just see how it goes. We need people like you. We need people who are interested in the environment and how to fix it. What's your take on the march next week in D.C.?
I actually had no idea about it, and I was just trying to convince a couple of my friends to go to the one in Chicago because we're from Northwestern, so it's a CTA right away.
Yeah, exactly.
At most.
And why wouldn't you go down to Grant Park?
And, like, I feel like colleges are such a large base of people to get to go. It just, nobody has heard anything about it. Especially being in so many environmental classes, I would have feel like we would have heard something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hopefully now you can change that.
Yeah.
And you can start the conversation.
Yeah, so definitely.
In environmental studies, what's the curriculum look like?
We actually just read Earth from McKibben.
Oh, McKibben.
Yeah, so that was interesting. And we read Hot from Hertzgard. So basically, I mean, I am a freshman, so this is my second quarter there.
Mm-hmm.
But we've just been reading a lot of the material and gathering as much information as we can for the past couple months. I don't know.
Well, no, you got to start someplace.
Exactly.
Well, it's good to
it's
hear
exposure.
That's yeah. Okay. Well, fabulous. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
I expect you to save the planet. Okay. Single handedly,
we'll
if you need to.
Ready, set, go.
Right.
I got it.
Next to her is her dad, Rich Fisher, who's chief sustainability officer with Evolve Recycling. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning.
It's great to have you on the the program. And, you know, you're one of the people who I hope is part of the solution to what's going on. Now, I have a gift for you. I brought this from home.
Oh, great.
It is my laser printer toner cartridge that ran out, and I don't throw them away, obviously.
Good.
I believe the last time I took it to the store where I bought it, they gave me like a $3 credit or something like that. I don't remember what it was.
We probably gave you the $3 credit in the end.
Okay. All right.
Through somebody else.
Explain how that works.
Okay. Well, Evolve Recycling is actually a division of Clover Remanufacturing. And what we do is we make all the remanufactured laser and inkjet cartridges.
Mm-hmm.
And as remanufacturing, as you probably know, uses a lot less energy, a lot less materials. There's a lot less attendant pollution. And a big part of creating that ecosystem is making sure that you're recycling the cartridges that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so our Evolve Recycling division is set up to make sure that cartridges don't wind up in landfills, but that we give an outlet for everybody to put the cartridge somewhere else who maybe doesn't have a store to go to or doesn't know about the programs or threw out the box that the cartridge came in and doesn't have the return little envelope that they put in it. So we try and create an incentive by paying people money to return their cartridges to us.
And can an individual do this, or does it have to be an organization or a company? How does it work?
Individuals can do it. I think, you know, for an individual, it may be more convenient to take it back to one of the store programs. But
Do you list your stores on the website? And, how would somebody know about which store to go to?
If you were to go on our website, we would give you the simplest way to do it, which is we would allow you to print off a return label that you could just use right away and postage-free send it to us. That's the simplest thing. That way you don't have to go any further than your mailbox.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the we also have drop-off centers at, I want to say, 4,000 or 5,000 of the U.S. Post Office locations. We are their collector of cartridges for them, along with small electronics.
Yeah, but the Post Office, you know, they're going to be shutting that down any day now. So
just on Saturdays.
There's another good reason to have post offices.
Yes,
if they're being part of the solution. So this insane attempt to shut down our postal service, which is really what it is, it's thinly disguised. It's basically bust the union and put those people out of work and then shut down and then privatize, I guess, you know. But I don't want to get on that tangent. I want to talk about what Evolve is doing. You know, I was amazed to find out that more than 500 million inkjet cartridges and 70 million laser cartridges, and I just handed you a laser cartridge, are sold in the U.S. annually. Every year, more than 400 million cartridges with a combined weight of 200 million pounds are put where? Into the landfills.
Yeah.
Yikes. 13 ink cartridges are thrown away every second in the United States.
It's a ridiculous number when you look at the scale of it. It really is.
A laser cartridge thrown into a landfill can take up to 450 years to decompose. Some components made of industrial-grade plastics will take more than 1,000 years to decompose.
Now, we make sure that no cartridge, working or not, ever winds up back in a landfill. The cartridges that are usable or repairable go into our remanufacturing operation. But those that are not, we actually have ground up and made into plastic pellets, and they become plastic for new items like clamshells for calculators or staplers, office desktop trays. So we keep all the plastic that comes into our possession out of a landfill.
But your goal is not to grind the plastic, but to reuse it.
We use as much as we can. We hit at least 90% from most sources because, yes, that's a higher and better use for us. I mean, the EPA, as you probably know, sort of has a hierarchy for the life cycle of products, and reuse is much better than recycling because the reuse allows further useful life, less pollution, keeps it completely out of a landfill.
Now, I love the concept. I mentioned it in the first hour of big ink and toner. You guys, now, did you hire Jeffrey Hazlett to do a talk about you?
We did. We met him, and, you know, as you know, he used to be the chief marketing officer for Kodak, and he has formulated sort of a point of view on the economics of Bingink and Toner and how the revenue stream that provides for the what we call the OEMs, the original equipment manufacturers, it just sort of its high social costs. And so he was really, really happy to do a short 4-minute internet piece for
and
us.
And I've got the link to it. In fact, if you go to my home page, MikeNovak.net, you'll see the picture of Jeffrey Hazlett there and his let me play just a little bit of that because it's actually pretty funny.
Oh, hi there. I'm Jeffrey Hazlett, best-selling author, business expert, and previously the chief marketing officer at a little company called Kodak. While there, I helped grow market share for our printers by exposing the shenanigans of the big boys playing in the space, the companies I call Big Ink and Toner. They've got some very interesting ways to keep charging you too much for their toner and inkjet cartridges. And one of those ways has to do with those used-up cartridges they want you to send back to them. See, instead of reusing them, they just destroy them. Send them to that big wood chipper in the sky. Pretty much like what I just did with that mug. I mean, you wouldn't toss out a mug when it could just go into the dishwasher, right? You wouldn't just grind it up into bits to be melted down and made into another mug, right? I mean, that's crazy. Well, Big Ink and Toner claims to have a perfectly good reason for destroying perfectly reusable cartridges. They'll tell you it's all about quality, that remanufactured cartridges don't perform as well as brand new cartridges.
And then he goes on and on and on. And, of course, he at one point gets starts talking about Evolve and what you guys are doing. So is that it must be really true that the big ink and toner guys have a different model for what they're doing. Yours is bring us the cartridge and we will try to reuse it and we'll give you money for it. Now, who else is doing that? Because as Jeffrey points out, the big ink and toner guys, they'll give you a credit. You go into one of those big stores and they give you credit towards purchase of another. But your idea is, I assume, that people like cash a lot better.
Yes. Our program is richer for the consumer than the various programs that the OEMs have. Mostly, I think, because the OEMs are doing it for a different purpose.
OEM?
The original equipment manufacturer. People behind the stores.
Just make sure everybody's up to speed here.
I mean, it's not really the stores that are paying for it in the end, right?
Right.
It's somebody behind them who's going to use the cartridge.
Right.
The stores are just kind of the conduit. Our model is a closed loop. What we want to do is we want to keep the cartridges in the manufacturing cycle. A remanufactured laser or inkjet cartridge costs 20% less than a brand new one and performs just as well. The pages are just as crisp. You get just as many pages out of the cartridge. We have it all third-party tested, so you don't have to take our word for it. And for the OEMs, I think that's a real threat because when you think about it, if you're watching the pocketbook and you care about the environment, why would you go and buy a new cartridge that's going to cost you more and that is going to have a bigger impact on the environment than a remanufactured cartridge?
And, this is the thing that all of us who have printers at home have been complaining about for, 15 years or so. It's the scam that the ink cartridge lasts, you print 7 or 8 pages and then you're buying another one, which it's almost cheaper to buy another printer than it is the cartridges. That's where the money is.
It's the razor and the blades, right? That's the old model.
Yeah.
I agree.
So how is it you can afford to do this?
Well, a remanufacturing process is a lot less expensive.
Wouldn't everybody do it if it were as profitable as you seem to think it is?
Well, you have to have something you can do with the cartridge. And we are a remanufacturer. We're a global remanufacturer, and we remanufacture millions and millions of cartridges a year. So we have an economic purpose we can put it to. So we can take that cartridge, and we put it into our remanufacturing operations. We take it apart. We make sure everything's working. We replace any parts that need replacing. And then we fill it back up with toner or ink and seal it back up. And out it goes as a remanufactured printer cartridge.
But aren't a lot of those cartridges, I'm looking at the laser. Now, that's pretty intricate. And frankly, I have an inkjet machine, and I have a laser. Why? Because I can print black and white a lot cheaper than I can color. And that's I love my laser jet printer because it cranks out stuff. And when I do talks, I do handouts, and I can print them myself. I can do double side and, you know, try to do that at a Kinko's or something, and you'll go broke.
That's true.
And at home, that is a really great way to go. But I look at that cartridge, and it's got a lot of moving parts. That's a pretty fancy, schmancy cartridge.
We have very intricate remanufacturing operations. We have facilities with a couple thousand people in them, and all they do is remanufacture laser jet cartridges. Our inkjet manufacturing is largely automated now. A lot of it's done by robots. It is a true manufacturing operation.
That's interesting, because that was actually where I was headed with the question. Is I can understand taking apart the laser cartridge like that, and I can see that. But those ink jet cartridges they look like they're just molded. And I mean, how do you mess with that?
You actually do a precision cut along one of the seams.
Oh,
and
okay.
Open it up that way. Depends on the model. In some cases, you can pop them, but most of the time, you're making some cuts and then you're just fusing them back together when you're done. But the robotic cages that they're done in are it's just amazing.
So, and by the way, that we're talking to Rich Fisher. He's a chief sustainability officer with Evolve Recycling, and you can go to their website. I've got that on my website. If you go to MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show. All the information is there. But if they want to go straight to the website, Rich, where would they go?
They would go to EvolveRecycling.com.
Which makes total sense.
It does.
So what else? You know, you recycle cartridges. Is that it? You also have small
electronics. We do small electronics and cell phones. The cell phone ecosystem isn't that different than the cartridges. A lot of times, you know, people don't think about their cell phone after they hand it over the counter to whoever they're trading it into for a new one. But there is a whole ecosystem behind that, and that cell phone also has a long, useful life ahead of it if you can just sort of get it into that repair, refurbishment, remanufacturing cycle.
I have an email that just came in from Bob, who's one of my faithful listeners, who's got a home out in Ottawa, and he said, home of Clover Technology.
Yes, home of Clover Technology.
Which is your parent company.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Bob.
Yeah. I first became aware of Clover several years ago when I was wearing my other hat as president of the Chicago Recycling Coalition. And you guys were doing something with the post office.
Yes, and we've expanded that program.
Let's talk about that.
Sure. As I think I mentioned earlier, we provide receptacles for people to deposit their used ink and toner cartridges. We also take small electronics and cell phones. And for people who find themselves in the post office and learn about it but don't have the item with them, there's actually a little bag with a label that you can take right there off the display and take it home and mail it direct. And the U.S. Post Office takes care of it for you.
I remember being really impressed by that. I thought that was a really great way to go, and glad to see that grown over
the
years.
Yes, the program, we just expanded it into sort of a relaunch expansion, if you will, with the electronics and with this option of either dropping it there or taking the label in the bag and mailing it in later. So they just relaunched it, I want to say, 3 or 4 months ago.
So what's next? I mean, take over the world? Is that it? I'm impressed by what you're doing so far, but I imagine you need to evolve, to coin a phrase.
Well, we do. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity. As you mentioned, there are an awful lot of cartridges that go into landfills. So we think that, that these are probably pretty much fertile fields for us to farm for a while, because there's so much opportunity to divert those cartridges back into a useful life. But the same process of finding something that has a useful life left and sort of putting it back into the manufacturing ecosystem is something you can do with a wide range of products. You know, it happens in the world today with auto parts. It happens with inkjets, and it happens the whole range of small electronics. I think as tablets become more popular, we're going to start seeing it with those too. the iPads and the Kindles and the Galaxies and all those things.
You're going to need to refurbish those as well.
These are expensive items that people make investments in. And so these things clearly have economic value that's ongoing, even after somebody has sort of said, well, I want to trade this in for the newest and the greatest.
So you take these products and refurbish them, then where does it go there? I mean, when you do renew a cartridge, does it sell for less the second time around or the same price or what?
If you were to, it's about 20% less. Our products are in all what we call the big box office retailers.
The average customer doesn't know it came from Evolve.
No, they don't know it came from Evolve. In a lot of cases, they don't know it came from Clover. And some, you know, we have our own proprietary brands, but then there are some customers who would like us to put it out under their brand so that they can sort of show that they have an environmentally responsible option. So it sort of depends what the channel is, whether it's a Clover brand that we put out or it's a private label brand.
So my question would be, and it may be a dumb question, what's the point of having a public image? You know, if you just do it, I mean, aside from the fact that people can return the toners, cartridges, and get some cash for it, I mean, it all seems to be kind of behind the scenes.
It's behind the scenes for some of the bigger big box retailers, but there's an awful lot of sales that occur after that. And quite frankly, you need to raise the profile in order to get the consumer to understand what the value is of the product. You know, the remanufactured inkjet and laser cartridges, they sort of first caught the public's fancy, not necessarily because of the price differential, but because of the environmental characteristics. And that's sort of what made it catch on, because I think initially people needed to understand that these items perform as well as the originals. And in order to give people a reason to try it, we wanted to get the message out about how environmentally superior they are. Mm-hmm. Now they're just sort of an accepted part of people's worlds, and there's a tremendous number of customers out there who have a preference for them, for price and the environmental characteristics.
The environmental characteristic being that you can reuse it and refill it.
Well, the environment, yeah, because when you make a new cartridge, when a company makes a brand new cartridge, they have to mold the plastic. The energy costs and the pollution costs and the material costs are two or three times that involved in creating a remanufactured cartridge. So environmentally, there's much less of a footprint left by making a remanufactured cartridge. Plus, you're keeping it out of the landfill.
All right. Let us in on the little secret. Come on. It's just you and me. Nobody else is listening, okay?
That's my fear.
Yeah. believe me, it's mine too,
yeah, okay?
I'll have you know, I told
your
my team. I told my team my website had 1.25 million hits last year.
Wow.
Ding, where's
oh,
the
wait.
Bell?
There we go. Yeah. Just so you know. So
That's really good. There's
a couple of people paying attention.
Definitely.
It's really nice to know. And it's different from radio. And as Norman Goldman always talks about, it's not just radio anymore. It's how you integrate all of the media. And, you know, it's Sarah Batka sitting here tweeting away about you. And what's your do you have a Twitter symbol?
They're Evolve Recycling.
Okay.
Who would have thunk?
Really? You guys, I like your message. It's nice and clean. And Lisa is on Facebook and putting the stuff up right there. And that's, you know, this is the 21st century.
Yes.
And how this works. And you guys know this. But the dirty little secret is, why does ink cost so darn much? My feeling is it's like gasoline, that all the products are basically the same, and then they just put them all, and then they mark up like crazy.
The markup on the new materials are tremendous. And the way I try and explain it is that all of the big ink and toner manufacturers, they're on a journey, because if you look at their earnings and you look at their histories, their legacy businesses, which were all the printers, it's kind of fallen apart. The demand's gone way down.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Why?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of printers out there, and the innovations, quite frankly, in the printers aren't leading people to want to put down a printer every 18 or 36 months. People now see that sort of as more of a utility. It's something you have to have, but you don't want to spend any more money on it than you need to. And most of the functionalities in printers that people want are there. So the printer businesses are going to hell in a handbasket. All the OEMs are losing billions and billions of dollars. Some of them are shutting them down. Some of them are talking about splitting their companies and divesting. And a lot of them are saying, who are we going to be in the future? And in the future, they're not sure, but they describe it as, well, we're going to provide on-demand services in the cloud, this and that, connect people. They're trying to figure it out. Well, the revenue streams that they need to get from the old world, the old model, which doesn't work anymore, to that new place they're going to that they quite haven't figured out yet, that revenue stream is the inkjet and the laser cartridges that they sell. So that's why they're so high, because they need those revenue streams to sort of support the company as they make the journey. Not good for the consumer, I don't think.
No, it's terrible for the consumer, and it makes the consumer cynical. It makes the consumer angry that these things run out so fast and they cost so much money. I think you're right. I think that the result of that is the market share drops.
Yeah.
This is one way, I guess, to reverse that trend.
Yeah, I think it's one way to personally throw off the yoke in everybody's individual life and to make a contribution to the greater good.
That is Rich Fisher. He is with Evolve Recycling. Rich, you mind taking a phone question? By the way, the number is 773-763-9278. And let us go to line one. Dan from Chicago, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hi, Rich. I have a couple of questions, but the first one is, are you aware, I saw a... On the YouTube, I saw a Russian computer scientist who was interested in why printers stop working after a certain amount of time, and documented his search over the months and years to find it, and he finally located a chip that was put in that basically shuts down a printer after a certain number of uses. And, and then, of course, it fits into the whole science of planned obsolescence. Have you been aware of anything like that for a possible investigation in terms of getting printers to keep working longer?
I have not heard that before, but obviously, we're all painfully aware of planned obsolescence in a whole bunch of categories, be it our printers or our cars.
Yeah, it seems like it would be a great thing to be able to come in and extract that chip somehow. Anyway, I'll try to find that link if I can. I probably made a note of it somewhere, and I'll be sure to send it to you. And another question is, what's your existing strategy of letting people know about where your locations are? Because I know people who are avid recyclers and are just driven crazy by the piles of stuff that build up that they don't know where to deliver it, even in a city like Highland Park, where they're working on it. The word just hasn't gotten out yet. Do you have ideas about that?
I do. I mean, generally, I would send you to our website because you can find the full range of options for recycling items there.
Okay.
But more generically, as I've mentioned, the post office, also schools. There is an organization out there called the Funding Factory that does wonderful work allowing teachers to generate dollars that they can use for extra items in their classroom. And it is largely underwritten by the recycling of items, including laser cartridges and inkjet cartridges, and we're behind that. So schools usually love to take donations of these items.
All right, Dan, I got to let you go. Suddenly the phone's lit up. Thank you for calling. I appreciate it. 773-763-9278. Let us go to Pat in Chicago. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Hi. I have a question regarding the cartridges. I've had two inkjet printers, and some are not good, but no matter which one, you get the note that they can't tell when it's empty because it's been a remanufactured cartridge.
Did you catch that? Because you broke up a little bit there.
I did. It's actually a topic we talk about a lot, which is the chip messaging that the original manufacturers put into the computers around the cartridges. You know, it's funny because one of the topics we talk about is not so much the message that they're not going to be able to tell you whether the cartridge is empty or not, but we talk about the messages that you get from the OEM printer cartridges that tell you go out and you need to go out and get a new one, when perhaps as much as 20% of the ink is still in that cartridge. It's sort of the cat and mouse game that goes on between remanufacturers and manufacturers. Manufacturers are scared to death that people will figure out that the remanufactured product is a superior alternative, so they try and create obstacles and impressions to people adopting them. And one of those is to put some messaging on a chip that says, hey, I've got a remanufactured cartridge in me right now. What can I do? Well, I guess I can tell them that I won't be able to tell them when it's empty. That's their best
right.
shot.
Well, the problem is it stops you from printing. You have to go back and say, okay. So it's annoying, but you know what? It's worth the price.
but you can overcome that.
Yes, you actually can. We work very hard, actually, to put chip interfaces in that eliminate those problems. That's part of the cat and mouse. You may have a printer that is sort of where they've got a new chip that does that, and we're still developing the chip that makes sure that you don't get a misleading message like that.
That's an excellent question, Pat. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
Have a great Sunday.
Thanks.
Let's go to line three, and Benita in Skokie, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you. I'm pretty near to purchasing a computer and a printer, and I want to know if you can tell me what is the best as far as ecology goes and recycling that I can purchase.
I do not know the answer to that, and I apologize, but I actually am not up on the various benefits environmentally of the various printers that are out there.
You know, that's an excellent question, Benita, and I don't know the answer to that either. I'd welcome my listeners shooting me a Facebook post or a tweet or an email, mike@mikenovak.net. You know, it's hard to choose, Benita. I will tell you from my own experience, Kathleen and I got a printer that we researched, went online, and got the, it said this is a great little printer for the price and blah, 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 and we've been really unhappy with it, you know,
because?
and it cost a fortune for the ink, you know, and that makes me crazy.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I've got all these, by the way, I've got all, you know, these, I never throw them out. So I got boxes full of cartridges in the house ready to go to someplace, and I should take them to you guys.
We'll find a way to pick them up from you for you. We're happy to do that.
I'd love that. Yes, Benita.
I'm pretty sure in Skokie I can take the computers to the recycling bank that we have here. I mean, Skokie has a good recycling bank, and I have a fax that's got a carbon printer, and when the carbon runs out, I just put it in the recycling bin that we have here in Skokie.
Well, that actually raises a really good question. I'm going to let you go, Benita, but it raises a question that I want to ask Rich, and that is, when people like Benita take a cartridge and they drop it in one of those recycling bins, is it being recycled properly? How do you know that it gets to be remanufactured versus ground up?
You don't. You basically have to do a little bit of investigation of who you're leaving it with. If it's going to a recycling source, I think you would hope that it would not wind up in a landfill. But in terms of whether it simply gets ground up and then turned into pellets for a new item, which is an okay option, quite frankly, as opposed to going to a landfill, or whether it's sort of getting the better or the superior option of actually being reused, you have to investigate a little bit who's behind the recycling program.
Let's take one more call. And John in Zion, you're on the air. How you doing?
Okay, thanks for letting me talk to you guys. A question about the turning in the old cartridges at the post office and stuff. Can you put more than one or two cartridges into the package for recycling?
I am not sure how many cartridges each bag holds, but since you're at the post office, you can just simply take more than one bag if you need to. And we actually have receptacles there to deposit them, and they sort of get consolidated in the back until there's enough for us to come do a pickup. So you can absolutely bring as many as you have.
Yeah. Do you happen to have them way up on the Illinois-Wisconsin border? I'm in Zion.
You know, I believe that they are up by you because I think they're in all the MSAs. So, yes, I think you should be able to find
I never looked
close.
For it because I have a HP, and I ended up putting a brand-new cartridge in it, and I only shot out five pages for black copy, and they said the cartridge was empty. So I knew that that cartridge wasn't completely filled, so I ended up calling the manufacturer, and they tried blaming it onto the printer. I ended up slapping another new one in there, and they kept on saying it's a printer. You got to take it, it's out of warranty, and blah, blah, blah. So I found out that the cartridge was not completely filled at the factory.
Well, that happens, but if it's the same folks making the printer and the cartridge, you think they'd take responsibility for it?
Yeah, they kept on just...
You'd think they would, wouldn't?
Right.
I don't
and,
know.
You know, each cartridge is, you know, like $45.
I know. It's outrageous. It's just...
Well, they're so tiny.
The scam of our times, I believe it is. Great question, John. Thank you. Here's what I'm going to do, John. I'm going to have... It leads into my next question. So I appreciate you calling. And the question is, how do we... Rich, how do we get a list of places, drop-off places for you guys?
I think we can provide that to you. We can sort of give it to you after the show, and you can put it up on your website if you'd like. We can have our folks put together a link. I don't have a custom list on my handheld right here to shoot you.
But. I know, because you've obviously hit a nerve. Look at those the phone calls that come in, and people have very strong opinions about this, and they want to do the right thing. And they want to reuse these cartridges.
We will absolutely help facilitate that. We'll
so would you shoot that to me, and I will make sure that I get it posted on all my throughout my empire.
We'd be delighted to. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming into the studio. That is Rich Fisher, Chief Sustainability Officer with Evolve Recycling. And thanks to Carson for being the new wave.
That's right.
Of people who are studying this and trying to do the right thing. So I appreciate having you both on.
Thank you.
And we will talk in the future. Okay.
I'd like that.
All right. Great. Here's some facts from the Care of Trees. There are over 23,000 different kinds of trees in the world. Did you know that? Did you know a tree can absorb as much as 48 pounds of carbon dioxide per year and can sequester 1 ton of carbon dioxide by the time it reaches 40 years old? One large tree can lift up to 100 gallons of water out of the ground and discharge it into the air in a day. 100 gallons of water in a day. One large tree can provide a day's supply of oxygen for up to 4 people. Trees trap more of the sun's energy than any other group of organisms on Earth. They are, in essence, big batteries. Only 1/10 of 1% of the sun's energy is trapped by organisms, but trees account for 50% of that energy. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at these wonderful, wonderful organisms. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220, 847-394-4220, The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com.
If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
We still got 15 minutes until closing time, but Denny Sheeter is on air microphone.
It's a new one.
Yeah, he was on the air piano a second ago and air guitar. Okay. That's why we do it. That's the only reason I play the music is so I can be entertained by Denny.
His airness.
Every Sunday. His airness. Now in studio, this is great. I have all these wonderful people coming through the studio today and talking about ways to help our environment and a week from Sunday, as I mentioned, and I keep mentioning it because I want people to get involved, that Lisa and I will be marching in Washington, D.C. for Climate Forward at the Washington Mall, and we will be broadcasting from there, assuming that all the technical stuff works. You know, we got our little hotspot, we got our mics, we got our laptop, and
very exciting. Everybody that I talk to about it is thrilled we're going to be there.
So, cool. I'm glad to hear that. And now, David Funchin, is that how you pronounce your last name?
Correct.
Thank you. Welcome. He's with 101 Celsius, and you can go to www.101. Use the numbers, 101 Celsius, one word, .com. You shot us a note, actually, to our Mark Ernest here at the radio station, and then to me about something that just sounds really cool, and that is the rally that's going to happen this week, right?
Correct. This Friday. At the Chicago Auto Show, we're going to take electrified vehicles and recreate the first auto race that ever happened in the United States.
And I put the Wikipedia entry up there. Which is really cool, and I think it was in your publicity information. And it was if you read all the way through it, it's pretty funny because most of the cars didn't even finish. They did it in winter. The things get, you know, there were mud ruts that the cars got stuck in snow, and
there was 18 inches of snow 2 days before the race happened. So
it was sponsored by the Chicago Times Herald. And Charles, how do you pronounce it? Durie motorized wagon. Anyway, won the race. But even then, it's just if you go to my website and click on the Wikipedia entry, it's just kind of fun to read about that. So this time, it is not to herald, and that was a big boost to automobiles because they had just been invented, and
it was the Times Herald. Did the race as a promotion for newspapers back then, for their newspaper, and also to try and convince the population that the automobile was a less polluting source than the horse. Right? It was a less polluting and more efficient way to move goods and services to market.
Okay, hold
than
on.
The horse.
And my response to that is, I've had a lot of use of that rim shot today. Isn't that amazing? There's a certain kind of irony in that, isn't there?
There is, and the I guess the other ironic portion or part of it is that an electric vehicle won the gold medal in 1895.
Oh, now that's the kind of irony you go, so we, you know, fast forward to 2013, and they're all electric vehicles. All right, do you have hybrids in there as
electrified
well? Electrified vehicles.
Right. So we have parallel hybrids like the Toyota Prius. We have serial hybrids like the Chevy Volt and Fisker.
Mm-hmm.
And we have pure electrics like the Nissan Leaf.
Mm-hmm. And now when you say it's on open roads, and that's what this is, it's throughout the city, you're not shutting down traffic at all?
No, so it's just a rally. We are recreating the race with a rally.
Okay.
So
there's the difference there.
Right.
And even the race wasn't much of a race. What were the
I think the average speed was seven and a half miles an hour.
you could run that.
Yes, we can.
So this rally goes around the city and hits a lot of
Through five Chicago parks. We pass 22 other Chicago parks. We go up to Evanston. We're going to have a press event up there at Independence Park. And then back down through, follow the route back down through the city. I mean, we pass a number of universities, and we're going to drive past President Obama's house on the south side.
Watch out for the Secret Service. I've been there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I checked it out last week. It's
you actually can't go down that street.
No, you can't go down that street.
Because it's blocked off.
But, you know, we'll be able to wave as we go past.
Yeah, exactly. Where do we stand with this? How are, for instance, Volt sales doing? It was a big deal when...
Well, they had a couple bad months, and then all of a sudden everything kind of turned around for them, and they sold... I don't want to speak for Chevrolet because I'm not an expert on the Chevy Volt sales, but they had a great December and looked like they had a great January as well.
Are we going to have that breakthrough? I mean, I have said this for years, which is I still don't know why we have internal combustion engines in cars. That my feeling is that if you're a conspiracy theorist, you would say the technology has been suppressed for 30 or 40 years to come up with something more efficient in terms of batteries and of course, less polluting. What would you say?
If you're talking about efficiency, yes. If you're talking about convenience, then it's, the conspiracy theory, I don't think, is going to hold water.
So why has it taken us so long to move past this? And now we do have hybrids. A lot of people love their hybrids. They're pretty cool. Now we're getting to...
I heard a quote from Jay Leno, who's a big, big car enthusiast. Nothing before its time.
Mm-hmm.
So that, it took
the Prius...
We don't have the time.
You know, good for you, Jay, and you can afford a hybrid,
but
I can't.
I think his thought was that... There are at a certain point, there will be a time for everything. And now is our time for the electrification of vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
In the 70s, that would not have worked, even with the oil embargo.
Mm-hmm.
Now with gasoline at, the highest for 2012 that it's ever been on average.
Yeah, and I notice it's going back up again.
And it's going back up again.
I mean, we haven't even had a Israeli war with Iran yet. So, come on.
So, 2012 is the highest price for gasoline this country has ever seen. We are on record. We've had the highest, for this time of year, the highest price of gasoline ever. Electrification of vehicles makes perfect sense now.
And how is it that Celsius 101 is involved with this?
So just like the original race, they were looking to do marketing for themselves. I have a project for a deployable solar thermal system that I developed for the U.S. military that I need to fund the second generation of. So I'm starting a Kickstarter campaign to get that second generation solar thermal system developed.
All right. Well,
and
you got my attention all of a sudden.
So it was easier. I've got this project, and it's for lack of a better term, it's in the Valley of Death. in terms of its innovation, at point of innovation.
So what does that mean?
The Valley of Death, it's where you have an idea and then, you know, you start developing that idea and then you get into this certain point called the Valley of Death where either you get through it and it's successful or it just stays there and dies with all the other good ideas that happened.
Yeah, we're the good idea graveyard.
Yeah, the good idea graveyard. So I thought that it might be easier for me to help facilitate somebody else's exit from the Valley of Death, i.e. the electrified vehicle segment, and get them out and out through the Valley of Death and then come back for my project.
Huh. Okay, that's interesting. I'm kind of fascinated by your project there.
So it was it's a standalone solar thermal system for the U.S. military, designed for the U.S. military, but it has applications in disaster relief and third world applications where we heat water for field kitchens and for showers, and use just solar energy to power the pumps and heat the water itself. So we use a really high temperature.
And how fast could this thing be set up theoretically?
The second generation, that's why I need to – the first generation was sold to the U.S. Army, and they're testing it. I need to fund the second generation so that I can improve upon the deployment time and get that down to just a couple minutes.
But if you already have the military involved
– you would think. I would say
they're already working on your first generation. There's your money, right?
No, it doesn't work that way at all. I mean, people think, oh, you know, U.S. military, you're made, you're golden. It's no.
Well, this is interesting because, you know, you and Lisa know each other.
Both in the same
and
segment.
These kinds of innovations, that's new to me. I'd never heard of anything like that, but I imagine not a lot of people have.
Solar thermal is really kind of the stepchild to PV only recently.
What's PV? Please explain.
Photovoltaic, so yes. Solar electricity.
But we do not allow acronyms on this show.
At the turn of the century, we had, you could buy 1900, you know, a 1905 Sears catalog, you could buy a solar hot water system. So when we say solar thermal, what we're referring to is solar hot water. It's common across the world where mm-hmm. we use the heat of the sun to heat our water, which is what the Romans did for the Roman aqueducts and the Roman baths. This is not new technology. It's not difficult technology.
It's just a matter of applying it
and using it intelligently.
Yeah, but the real way to go, let's burn coal and gas and heat. Aren't we?
We were taught to be consumers.
Yeah.
We were taught by those industries. They came in the 1900s and said, hey, listen, you guys want a hot bath, you know, even when the sun's not shining, and we'll bring you fuel to your home. You pay us this monthly charge. It's fine. And we just learned to become consumers.
Yeah. And now we're going back to what we knew 100 years ago. That's pretty amazing stuff.
The Romans were much...
I'm sorry. Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry. Romans. Okay. 1,000 years ago. 2,000 years ago.
Yeah,
something like that. Yikes. Not quite as sophisticated, but there you go. So how much of the auto show opened yesterday, and how much of it is centered around electric technology?
Almost every manufacturer has either a hybrid or some sort of electrified car,
mm-hmm.
Or is in the process of bringing one out.
Mm-hmm. And the prices, what's the lowest you can expect to pay for an electric, partially electric car?
Right now I think the best way to go is even the leases. You can lease a Leaf for, I think it was $199. I mean, it was just it's an amazing price that they're giving on the leases for both Chevy Volts and Nissan Leafs.
Wow. That's a way that I hadn't thought of before, too.
Right.
Is that leasing might be a better way to go with that. So the big race or rally. Don't call it
Correct.
A race.
Thank you.
I don't want anybody to get in trouble.
I don't need the extra
here.
Liability.
Yeah. That's true. So are you going to have a checkered flag and everything? Is it going to be – I imagine you got to get some press coverage out of this.
It should be you talk about renewable energy and not getting this climate rally and not getting enough respect if you don't get 20,000 people to show up. People show up for for cars and new cars.
They do. Especially. They like their cars. We do in America. We love our cars.
So
let's hope we...
I thought it was a good tie-in, you know.
This Friday.
Bring them together.
What time do you start?
We're going to kick off or leave McCormick Place at 10 o'clock.
Okay, 10 a.m.
But we'll be there before for media, and people will be allowed to, you know, walk up and see all the cars.
Well... It sounds like a lot of fun. That's David Funchen from 101 Celsius. If you want to see electric cars, go to the car show or see the rally.
And we'll have it up on a Facebook page. And
I'll post it on my Facebook. Yeah, and of course, next week, Lisa, you and I headed to D.C.
D.C., baby.
This is going to be fun. I'm really looking forward to it.
I don't even care that it's raining.
Sarah, Rob, take care of the place, Denny, while we're gone. Okay?
It's going to be awesome.
It will be. Until next week, go green or...
Go home.
Go home.
This is 820 AM WCPT Willow Springs, 92.7 FM WCPT Arlington Heights, 92.5 FM WCPY DeKalb, and 99.9 FM WCPQ Park Forest, Chicago's Progressive Talk.